Kathleen Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now in the studio from members of the Park City Board of Education, Julie Eihausen and Phil Kaplan. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you had a special meeting yesterday, a little bit unusual, just because you had some decisions to make, Julie?
The goal of yesterday's meeting was basically to kind of line out and set up what we needed to discuss on the 27th, because we do need to start making some decisions. And, Phil worked the agenda to make sure that whatever people needed to have, whatever we needed from administration, or whatever conversations we needed to have as a preemptive discussion, we tried to get that done. So we're not going to have, a five-hour meeting, hopefully, on the 27th.
So the board yesterday then voted to rescind grade realignment for next year?
Yes, correct. Yesterday we made two decisions regarding what ultimately leads to alignment facilities and the financing of the facilities. And the decisions were, first, that we would reaffirm the alignments. We formally voted. So this is now the second board in a row that has voted for the alignment, but this time with much more time, because it's been an extra 2 years since the last vote, that the alignment will be pre-K-4, 5-6, 7-8, 9-12. The board voted to reaffirm that. And this time with the unanimous board support, support from our district office administrators, school administrators, and the teachers also wrote in to support it. The second decision we made yesterday was to rescind the timing of the realignment, because we want to make sure that when it does roll out, that it rolls out properly.
Now, Julie, this was something that you had really wanted to see go through this fall. You were convinced otherwise?
Oh, no, I voted no.
Okay, so it wasn't a unanimous decision.
No, we had two votes. So it was a unanimous decision to reaffirm the grade realignment, and as far as the structure that Phil just outlined. Then there was a second portion of it that was another vote that was to remove the 2017-18 school year date out. And yes, I voted against.
Yeah, how come though?
Well, my personal perspective is we've known since 2015, and I personally know that there are a lot of staff members who've been working since 2015. I just think if we don't start making some decisions and start moving forward, this can take, 5 years, 10 years. And again, personally, I do not think we have that much time in Treasure Mountain. I'm concerned about that.
Let's talk a little bit about Treasure Mountain, because we've heard price tags, $400,000 or something, to do what exactly? I mean, for students to stay in that school.
Right. So Treasure Mountain, I think we all know, is a dated school. It's 35 years old. We've had many years of deferred maintenance, but the big problem with it is essentially economic. It's the cost of replacing that building is something above 80% of, it's 80% of the cost to replace it to keep the building operating, because there's really, really old systems in there that we would have to replace to keep it open for another 10 to 15 years. It's just not worth it when we could build a state-of-the-art school for not that much more money.
But how much money do we have to spend in order to keep kids there? Because those kids have to stay there. We're going to have like the fifth, sixth graders there until a new fifth, sixth grade school is
built. Correct. I mean, when you have an old building like that, it's going to cost a lot more to maintain than a modern building that's power efficient and has the right kind of insulation in it, and it has more efficient heating and cooling systems. It does cost more to operate that building.
Yeah, but what we've heard, though, is that there had to be about $350,000, $400,000 of just repairs for students to be able to stay in there.
I would say that it was at least that. And I mean, that was
and
part
so what
of,
has to happen?
Well, I mean, that was part the... of, oh, but we haven't got the full list. We will get a whole capital list. And then Todd will go into, what he needed to fix and what they needed to do to be able to, again, limp through another year. When we were talking about this building with the original bond. That was something that was, you know, if we don't build another building and find somewhere else to house 800 students, we are going to be spending millions of dollars to keep this building running. Unfortunately, there's nothing we can do about that. I do want to correct you on the 5-6 situation. Due to the fact that we're moving grade realignment a year, from what I understand, we're not moving kids next year. So the kids that are, I don't know what we're going to do at the elementary schools. The fifth grade currently is going to be staying in the elementary schools. We will most likely have trailers at every elementary.
Yeah, I guess I was assuming jumping up as in terms of 18, 19, you're going to have to find a place for those 5-6 groups. But let's talk a little bit about, what I'm hearing is that we've got some serious issues with the HVAC system. And in terms of, it's not that it's just old and doesn't work efficiently, but that we may be spreading very toxins, perhaps even lead, heavy metals.
I think that's lore. We all know that the ground under Prospector is former mining tailings, and there's EPA guidelines. In fact, the EPA spent a lot of time this summer going in cooperation with us to recap grounds and things like that. So, those kind of metals and things do leach into the environment, but our maintenance people are absolutely on top of that. We are not putting kids in. I will say my own daughter is in that building, so there's just not a safety issue for students going there every day. It's just an old, obsolete building that's not up to current code, and we would like to replace it through this next cycle of facilities and financing, but we're going to do it in a thoughtful way and not a rushed way.
So let's see. How do we pay for all of this here? We have about $20 million in the bank. That'll help move forward with the expansion on the high school, but I'm not sure that's even enough to finish the high school, is it?
No, it's not. What we discussed yesterday in a little bit of detail, we didn't make any decisions, but we talked about taking this summer and next year to build the 5-6 school and moving those kids and potentially leaving the ninth graders in Treasure Mountain until we can finish the high school expansion. All of this is going to be pending on whatever financing is approved, if the bond passes or doesn't pass. But we're also, there's conversations going around that maybe we don't do it in 2017, that we do the bond in 2018. For this board member, that concerns me because that just adds another year, at least, to Treasure Mountain's price tag for maintenance.
Yeah, so there seems to be some disagreement on the board in terms of when we should bond. You guys support bonding this fall?
I haven't declared a position one way or the other. I think we'll bond when we're ready, and I want to hear all the opinions on the board. There's five of us, and each one of us spends a lot of time thinking about it, and we all hear from various people in the community, and I think we will come to a conclusion, but to me, I want to emphasize process. We are right now in a phase where we're gathering input from community members. We are advanced in looking at the high school process. There's going to be two options presented to the board at the meeting next Tuesday that we're going to look at. That's going to be one of the big elements. We need to come to some conclusions on 5-6. We also have a lot of we're also trying to be very thoughtful about having long-range options as this community continues to grow.
All right. Back to the financing, though. In order to move forward without bond money, are we talking about a property tax increase?
I'm not going to answer that because we don't know what we're going to do. And, the last time that this happened, when we said we're going to be stuck and we're going to have to do something, it basically was spread around that we were shoving a tax increase down people's throats. And we were not doing that. We were basically saying if the bond doesn't pass, we have to figure something else out. So that's going to be my answer. If the bond that we propose, whenever we propose it, if that bond doesn't pass, we are going to have to figure out financing. It's just a reality. We have a building that houses 800 students. We have to replace that building.
We do.
I'll just jump in there and say, come watch school board meetings. We record them on video, and anyone in the community can watch them. There's five board members, five opinions. We all speak, and we come to consensus. And sometimes we have to vote and don't come to consensus, but we make decisions. And I would say that this is a fiscally conservative board that is very cognizant about any money that we spend in either operations or the long-range facilities.
Yeah, but what I'm hearing you say is that we're spending money that we don't have because we're moving forward with the expansion of the high school. We don't have enough money to pay for it, and you're telling me that we're not going that you won't talk about property tax increases.
Well,
because that's the only other way to pay for it.
I mean, look, we've got multiple ways to pay for it. We have not made a decision yet, so I'm not going to comment on which way we're leaning. We'd certainly prefer to bond, and I think the intent is to try to have the long-range facilities plan done with a bond because that is the best way to pay for it. You know, and that being said, we want to really watch where the money is going, and the board over the last couple of years and also coming into this budget cycle has been we have grown our tax the actual tax bill has gone down per household, and we are performing in line or better than any other local entity.
Let's talk briefly about how start times figures into all of this. Are we still talking about implementing later start times at the high school this fall?
That depends on which board member you speak to.
Yeah,
we haven't made a decision.
Right.
There is just stay tuned on that, and that topic is going to come in March. The big issues that this is something we had a forum last night at the Ecker Hill Middle School about middle level learning. And that was also posed there. And basically where we are is we're going to make a decision in March regarding next year. But we do have some blocking issues around transportation because it does not make a lot of sense to move the start times up, even though it's already policy, if we're going to just have buses sit in traffic. So we need to overcome a few blocking issues, but we are committed to moving the start times back.
Okay. Let's see. What else you guys discussed? Briefly met in closed session to discuss collective bargaining because we've got a teacher contract that needs to be settled for the upcoming school year?
Teacher contract, administrative, and classified, yes.
All right. So given that we know we've got millions of dollars in construction cost, what does that leave for teachers? Are you just really waiting to see what the state legislature does?
Well, you know, as you know, those are two different buckets. So our M&O bucket, we are taught is in the process of giving us basically, you know, here's how much we're going to have coming in. Here's what we have to spend, you know, to continue with, you know, staffing and what have you. And here's what we have left. So when we know what that number is, then we can have a conversation and you know, let the teachers know and let classified know that this is how much we've got. And then also how much of that is ongoing money and how much of that is fund balance money. Because fund balance money is one-time money, and you want to be very careful to not fund a long-term liability with short-term money.
Okay. So, again, those conversations started then with the teacher union? And
We're just in the preparatory phases of it. We've had a training administration board and union representatives for each of the unions to have an interest-based negotiation where we're trying to find the common ground and negotiate from that.
Yeah. And real quick, just want to make note that we do have a special regular session coming up February 27th. That's going to be a Monday afternoon as opposed to your Tuesday meeting.
Yeah, there was a scheduling issue with some of the staff. They weren't going to be able to attend. And this is a meeting that we feel we need to have our full cabinet there. So, yes, we are going to meet on the 27th. We will be going into closed session. So we need to open up the session at 3 o'clock. We will then immediately go into closed session. We'll probably be in there for an hour. And then we'll come back in, and the regular meeting will start at 4.
All right. And there's this is something that if people are following along, it should be a meeting that they plan to attend, right? Because we're going to start talking about the high school, right, and how we move forward with that.
I recommend everybody attend every meeting, but that's just – Board Member Eisen, but yes, the meeting on the 27th is definitely going to be a meaty meeting.
A decision that of what you do in terms of the high school expansion plans, is that fair?
It's going to be possible that we would make a decision. It's more likely we're going to be presented with two options, and it's more likely that we will maybe go back with some more comments, and plus it would be good for us to hear from the public before setting something that important in stone.
Okay, so we've got two options. We'll have costs on both of those options and really just a discussion of of the pros and cons, I'm guessing.
Most likely. I mean, we could make a decision, but the board will decide whether we're going to do that or allow time for public comment, which is much more of our typical practice at this point.
Okay. You guys have a lot on your plate. Nobody envies you. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I'll just say that the community has been very engaged since the beginning of the year, and we are all hearing from people, and please keep it up. It really helps us to hear opinions, ideas, and when you write to your board member or meet with your board member, please get to the point, make it brief, and know that you will hear back from us. Thank you very much.
All right. Phil Kaplan, Julie Eihausen, thank you.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now is 8:33. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council met last night, and what seemed to be a night of business as usual turned out to be a meeting of minds and inspired ideas. After excusing Mayor Jack Thomas from the meeting, Mayor Pro Tem Tim Henney began the meeting with the usual comments and updates from council members. Council member Andy Bierman telling council that he learned about a bill that would have removed some crucial safety measures in home. Andy Bierman joins me now in the studio. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk about that first. And what was it that you guys heard about the?
At this time of year, the legislature is in session, and we always have a few surprises pop up. We had one this week that we didn't expect coming, which was a bill that removed. Removed our authority to put sprinklers in our homes up here because we actually burned the ground as a city. So it's part of our psyche here, our fear of fire. And a lot of it has to do with our topography and our limited ability to deliver water. So the state gives us an exemption that allows us to require fire sprinklers in our homes and businesses here. And the Utah Home Builders Association wanted that to be removed. And this caught us entirely off guard. We went down to the legislature and met with their lobbyists, and their lobbyists told us it was because of complaints by the Park City Home Builders Association. We came back up here. We contacted their president, Chris Quinton, had a great talk with him, and in 20 minutes we were able to sort it out with them. Their concern was a different one. It had to do with the requirement that we use water in our sprinkler systems as opposed to glycol. In the last few years, the glycol technology has changed, and it's no longer something that we see as problematic. We talked with the fire chief up here, our fire marshal, as well as Summit County. They're willing to work with the Park City Home Builders, and as a result, the president made a call down to Representative Ray, who was sponsoring this legislation, asking him to take that exemption out. So, moral of the story, we can often work these things out very easily on a local level where we know what the challenges are and we have personal relationships. When they get down to the legislative level where they try to make wide sweeping changes, it's really dangerous.
Yeah. So we're okay? Everyone's happy?
We'll find out more today. This is fast moving. And yesterday was when we met with the Park City Home Builders. So we believe we'll be okay on this one. But until we see it taken out of the legislation, we're going to stay on high alert.
All right. Also, housing specialist Rhoda Stauffer and community development director Ann Laurent presenting three new housing resolution amendments to the council. These would do what?
These were minor tweaks. They were adjustments to how we evaluate things. We've been looking at workforce wage to determine how we define affordability, and we switched that over to average medium income, and we also lowered those amounts. We're looking at our housing needs, and we think we had set the bar a little high for incomes, so we lowered those, and we also adjusted our fee in lieu up considerably to reflect the real building cost of affordable housing in Park City.
Yeah, Rhoda also mentioned that she wants to look closer at the basis for calculating housing obligations, specifically commercial, and is looking at doing a business survey. What would that do?
You know, I think we're just trying to get a better handle on how our businesses impact our workforce, our housing needs, and is there a way to recoup some of that through licensing or taxes or fees? And we're really at this point, we're just sort of turning over all rocks to figure out how we can add to our housing funds.
All right. With regard to the rezone of Rossi Hill, Council member Cindy Matsumoto seemed to turn the whole item around for everyone. Her suggestion, I think, was to turn the BLM parcel into recreation open space now instead of medium density?
Yeah, just a little bit of – can I give a little bit of background on this one, Leslie? This is referring to Rossi Hill or Lilac Hill, where we've got those three historic structures with a bunch of open space behind them. That land, the underlying land is owned by the BLM, but the Dennis family actually owns the homes on that. And they're working with the BLM to release that land. That land is not currently zoned because it's held by the BLM. And there's their parcel and several other ones around there. We've been working with the property owners as well, or I should say the homeowners, as well as the surrounding neighbors that would like to see that kept as low density. And we achieved a nice compromise last night, which I didn't expect. I didn't see a happy ending for this one, but the homeowners, the Dennises, were able to work with the surrounding neighbors and work with the city to come up with a zoning that's acceptable to everybody. But what Cindy suggested is let's add additional protections by taking the remaining BLM parcels. There's a couple of very small slivers and make those zoned as a recreation open space. So we make sure that those stay open.
All right. So is that what you voted on?
Because we had this had been months in the making, perhaps a year or two in the making, this compromise. So we went ahead and approved the compromise and set the zoning in place for there. But these slivers Cindy was talking about, we're going to revisit. We've asked staff to go back in front of the Planning Commission. But because everybody had worked so hard to get to this point, we didn't want to remand it back to the Planning Commission and require another 6 months or something on this.
What we heard from City Manager Diane Foster was that Mr. Dennis would be able to build maybe as many as 6 units then where he's at. Is that does he still have that?
Yes. There is the ability to add more units there. We have to keep in mind that there are existing historic structures they're going to have to work with and setbacks. And so on paper, I think it's actually up to 8 units could be built there. I think in reality, it's going to be considerably smaller. And what can be built there is going to have to be really small to be compatible with what's existing. So again, it's not a perfect compromise. Some of the residents really want to see that remain as complete open space. But I feel like we got a buffer and we have low density in there, so it's enough that everybody feels good about it.
Okay, let's see. There was Chad Ambrose from Rocky Mountain Power was at the meeting. What happened here?
Well, we've been working with Rocky Mountain Power for the last year on developing a solar utility for Park City to help meet our 2022 municipal net zero goal and our 2032 community goal. We can't do that without finding a way to provide clean, renewable energy for the entire community. So this is a cooperative statement with Rocky Mountain Power that says we agree that we are going to work together on developing this utility. And it laid out some of the basics. But really, from them, they wanted we've put considerable time and resources into this, as have they. And they wanted a commitment from us that we are going to work with them going forward and not pursue multiple tracks if they're going to invest all this time and money and energy into it.
Can you explain to me briefly what that looks like? I mean, is it a solar farm?
Tell you what we envision. The first trick is our municipal footprint. We're electrifying our fleet, so we got it, you know, which doesn't do us any good if we can't find clean, renewable power. We would like the city's utility to be local, someplace in town or in the surrounding area. So we're looking at, we need about 70 or 80 acres to build solar for that. So that's the first step. The community-wide program is going to take a few legislative changes. We want to set that up in a way that everybody in the community will be able to participate, and it's going to need a utility built somewhere in a zone that is a high-efficiency solar zone, which is likely going to be central Utah. That's the ideal location. And so we're pursuing those as parallel tracks. Certainly the 2022 is coming up pretty quickly, so I think we're trying to identify land right now where we could build the local utility, and the larger one we're going to get working on in the next year or two as well.
So those who have solar panels currently, would they then look to Park City Municipal as their now utility provider?
We would not. No, that's the thing here. If we were in a different state with different laws, it would be much easier for us to be a utility or cooperative programs or some of these other methods we could pursue. Unfortunately, we don't see that happening in a reasonable window for Utah, which is part of why we're working with Rocky Mountain Power. They've shown a real willingness to provide what our consumers and residents want. And so they will be the provider on this, but we're just trying to work it out in a way that we get 100% clean, renewable for the community, and we can do it in an affordable manner. And it's a change of business model for them, but it isn't a significant – I think it's where they're headed regardless. They know this is where they need to be. They aren't building any more coal-burning plants. And so we're just going to be the vanguard and perhaps a test case and hopefully a model to show other communities how this can be done.
Because certainly another option that the city has is doing something like Heber City has done, right? Has its own utility.
Yeah, we could look at doing our own utility, but I believe – Boulder is they decided about a decade ago to do that, and they are still working out the details. It's cost tens of millions of dollars to get there, and it still isn't implemented. And we don't feel like we have the time. We feel like there's urgency on climate change, and we want to convert sooner than later. So working with Rocky Mountain Power is practical, and it's realistically the only way we can implement this in the next decade.
All right. Couple of off-agenda items, though. Bonanza Flat update. I know that you're working hard on this. My understanding is that we haven't even raised the first $1 million yet. We also have some government agencies telling us that they cannot financially participate, which we were relying on to get 10 of the $13 million. So it really doesn't sound like it's going to happen. I'm
not sure who you're referring to, but the three main governmental partners we've been working with are Summit County, Salt Lake County, and Salt Lake City, and we've had great conversations with all of them this week. Certainly, they are facing challenges because of the short timeline. If you look at how budgets work, we're all mid-budget cycle, and it's a big ask to hit any of them with. But all three of them have told us that they want to be partners on this, and they're going to make contributions. Working out the exact amounts and the timing and what funding sources those are going to come from has been a real scramble. But we feel comfortable, or I should say confident, that our partners are trying very hard to participate, and I think they'll be able to come through.
Okay, so you're sounding pretty optimistic about this.
Yeah, I mean it's a stretch. $13 million is a ton of money to come up with on a short timeline, but the community support for this has been incredible, and everybody is it's all hands on deck.
Outdoor retailers, of course, announcing that that they're not coming back to Utah once the contract ends. Can you talk to me a little bit about just the economic impact, maybe to Park City with OR leaving?
Yeah, this is just a huge loss to the entire state of Utah and certainly to Park City. I know my business specializes in conferences for outdoor companies and for environmental groups. And every year we do quite a bit of business related around outdoor retailers. So, I'm going to see a direct impact on this. But I think overall, Utah is very we're kind of bipolar on how we're approaching the economy right now, in that the state is promoting tourism and outdoor recreation and this great sustainable economy that is charging forward and doing tremendous things for communities like Park City. And yet, on the other hand, we have political policies in place that say we want to roll things back to a rural lifestyle and support things like coal mining and oil drilling. And that disconnect is really starting to hurt us. And I think outdoor retailer is just the first thing to hit us, because we've been negotiating as a state with Interbike, who has the same promoter. That's a huge show that's been in Vegas, and they're looking to move, and Salt Lake was the logical choice for that. That would have been a great piece of September business that would have impacted the state and probably brought a lot of folks to Park City to stay. And things like even the Winter Olympics, I have a hard time conceiving with their focus now on political correctness and supporting communities that support their sports and that. I think it's a delta blow to our chances of that in 2026. Yeah. So I struggle with this. I really wish the state would embrace some of these emerging sustainable industries like outdoor recreation and tourism, and quit looking backwards, look towards our future.
Well, I mean, basically what the governor's office is saying is that, you know, it just shows how a political agenda rather than reason or merit is capturing the decision-making of the outdoor industry,
Well, I agree the governor's office has a political agenda on this. I think the outdoor industry is expressing their conscience. I don't think they want to leave Utah, but they have no choice. Their largest participants have said they are going to boycott the show if they stay. And, certainly the governor has taken a strong stance on public lands. I happen to disagree with his stance. I'm not surprised he didn't back down, but that's where he feels like he needs to be. I think that is incongruent with where most of the residents of Park City, how we feel and would like to see the stance towards public lands and preservation. You know, Bonanza Flats is just a recent example of how committed this community is to preservation, not only because we think it's important, but it also is a driving factor for our economy.
Finally, I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you had or were in attendance, but the Special Event Advisory Committee meeting this week basically to talk about Sundance. What have you heard?
From Sundance?
Just anecdotally, from community members.
Oh, from community members. I think on the whole, it was a great festival, but it was very, you know, it's always pushes us to our limits. And to have the storm of the decade hit us in the middle of the Sundance, along with the large Women's March, it was a lot. I think we pushed our town near to the breaking point, but I think everybody tried hard and stayed in good spirits, and so... we got through it. I think going forward, we're going to have to continue to evaluate, are there better ways to manage the festival? We're going to have a discussion on whether we should limit car traffic into town to official vehicles and residents only, and really force the point of taking public transportation or using taxis and shuttles that, say, use a dispatch lot on Sweet Alley or something. I know staff's going to come back with a proposal for that. So I think there's going to be ongoing conversations. Every year we try to make tweaks to keep the festival vibrant but accommodate our community.
Yeah. What about Lower Main Street? Because the Sky Plaza, they're not being used. We kind of moved it into Lower Main Street. Some businesses unhappy with that.
Yeah. I was one of the council members that opposed that because I didn't feel like we were ready to make that change. Ultimately, we decided to move forward with it, and I think we had a couple of problems. We weren't fully prepared for it. So we'll take a look at that, and hopefully that'll come into play on our decision-making. We hit or miss on council. There are some things we try that work and some things we try that aren't perfect, and this is one that I think needs some adjustments if we're going to do something like that in the future.
Yeah. And then also just the news that Sarah Pierce is leaving, so you've got a whole new personality now to deal with.
Yeah, we're sad to see her go. Sarah's been a great partner, and I've had the opportunity to work with her for many years, and we hate to see her go, but hopefully they'll find somebody quality to replace her.
Yeah, and certainly, as you and I have talked about, you and your wife, Thea Leonard, have put the TMI up for sale.
Yeah.
How does that impact your business dealings with Slam Dance? Are they going to have a home there forever? Or?
Well, I mean, I can't look that far in the future with the crystal ball. I told Slam Dance this year I would work with them on a contract for next year. It doesn't look, I really don't know where we're headed, and I can't talk about it. I've got a lot of different scenarios on the table I'm looking at, but none of them are going to impact us before next winter. So we know that Slam Dance will be back next year, and depending on how the ownership goes and what their demands are, we'll decide after that.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I do. We talked about Bonanza Flats earlier, but I just want to go back to Councilman Henney. Talked in our opening comments about how amazing it is that our community has stepped up to the level we have. There are events going on every day. Certainly there was an amazing combination of the KPCW pledge drive and some matching funds going towards Bonanza Flats. And it has really, as I said earlier, it's been all hands on deck. There is just such support in this community for this. And I want to tell everybody to keep going because it's a huge lift and I think we can get it done, but it is going to take a big push. And so thank you, and let's get there.
All right. Andy Bierman, Park City Council Member, thanks.